Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
No games on the schedule?
No!
That doesn't stop us from talking football. This is the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development. Here are your hosts, past WFCA President Tom Swiddle and WSSP High School Insider Big Time Mike McGivern.
Oh, welcome to the Pick and Save WFCA show, as always presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising Leadership Development. I'm Mike McGivern. Alongside my co-host, Tom Swiddle. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Mike. How are you?
Man, good. It's good to see you. It's
great to see you as
All-Star,
well.
All-Star games went well.
They did go well.
Yeah.
Other than the weather in the last game of the day.
Yeah, that was a little tough.
That was. Had to cancel the fourth quarter, in essence.
But the rest, I think the crowd looked good. I think these kids, I haven't talked to any of them, and I always look forward to talking to a couple of them. Had a really good week.
They did. All the feedback I got was everything was really well run. The went off without a hitch. Very pleased.
And hit our budget, I think, right? Hit our goal for...
We did.
Yeah.
$457,000, I think, was the final total.
Man,
it's actually
awesome.
Going to be a little higher than that.
Yeah, it'll get to 460.
Well, I know Ingrid and I and the Golan Bieskis counted our auction money on Monday, and there was over $10,000 there.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, this show that you started that, you know, came to me and said, let's do this, is to do stuff like that.
Right.
Is to highlight, promote, and put a spotlight on really good things, and that's one of the reasons we do the show. One of the other reasons is for guys like our first guest.
You bet.
Former Brookfield East... He was the Wisconsin High School Player of the Year, and he's now the starting defensive end for your Wisconsin Badgers. We're going to talk to Alec James. Alec, how you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
We're doing really well. I'm doing really well. Coach, you're doing well, huh?
I'm doing well as well, Alec.
You got a big smile on your face.
I do. This is a pleasure for me.
Hey, Alec, I got to tell you.
It's always a pleasure.
I got to tell you a quick story. I was telling Coach during the break. Joe Cook used to be my co-host during my high school football show, which starts here in a couple of weeks. And he was the offensive coordinator at Brookfield Central when you were playing Brookfield East. And the week before he was playing you, he came in, he was shaking his head. I said, what's going on? He said, I'm breaking down film on Brookfield East. This Alec James kid, he said they ran an option. He blew it up in the middle, and they faked the handoff. He basically took the guy that had the ball, threw him out of the way, came down, and the quarterback tried to get outside. He says, a fast quarterback. He threw the blocking back away, and then he ran down the quarterback and pushed him out of bounds. He said, I got nothing for this guy. So it was he was worried about you.
And let me tell you, Mike, you know, Alec did that against everybody, not just Brook Central.
Right. Yeah. And he said, man, it was he said, then they go ahead and give him the ball. What are they thinking over there? Did you put him in the backfield a little bit?
Well, of course.
Oh, you're so smart, Coach.
Yeah, I'm smart when I can really coach smart. A guy like Alec James,
yeah,
right?
You're smart. Hey, Alec, your decision to stay here in state and go to Wisconsin, I know you had offers to go a lot of different places all over the country. We were really happy. Guys like me, really happy that you decided to stay home. Good decision for you?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, the recruiting process, I was blessed to have Coach Swiddle and Coach Johannes. They helped me through it a lot. And, you know, it came down to Wisconsin, Oregon, and Michigan State were like my top three. And just getting a chance to visit those schools and kind of I found myself comparing everything back to Wisconsin. So I was like, man, that's got to be the right place if everything I'm comparing is back to there. And, you know, till this day, I'm happy I made the decision. If I had to do it all over, I'd do it again.
Yeah, and Alec's not even mentioning some of the other schools he could have gone to, like Clemson, like TCU. I mean, Alec's list of schools that offered was extremely long. And, you know, Alec, you Your recruiting started at Wisconsin with Coach Bielema.
Yeah.
He left. You committed to Wisconsin when Coach Bielema was there, and then Coach Anderson came in. You played with him. Now you're on your third Wisconsin coach with Coach Crist. And you know, how are things transitioned from Coach Bielema all the way to Coach Crist for you?
Oh, the transition has actually been pretty good. I mean, it kind of shows you. I mean, one thing you told me when I was getting recruited that I always remembered was that you don't commit somewhere just for a coach. And it kind of just shows the business side of things, and you just got to commit to a program. So for all the young guys out there, they just got to recognize you can't just commit to a coach. You really got to love the program. But as far as the transition, it's been pretty easy. I mean, we've had great coaches. They've all been good. I really like Coach Crist. I think he's a perfect fit for our program, and I'm real excited about this upcoming season.
Hey, Alec, you had talked about for kids that are listening, high school kids that are listening, make sure you don't just commit for the coach. Can you talk a little bit more about the transition from high school to college, not only on the football field but in the classroom?
Yeah, so as far as the transition, it went pretty quick for me and a couple other guys in the Wisconsin area because we graduated and then the next day we had workouts up in Madison, so the transition was real fast.
Man.
In fact, and, I think you had to come home for graduation, if I remember. You were actually up there and came back to graduate.
I moved to Madison like 2 days before graduation. Then I had to come back and then go back for workouts the next day. But with all the support we have, and I'm sure it's at any college you go to, this transition is pretty easy. Academically, you really want to focus on starting off strong. And that's kind of one area I struggled in high school is my freshman and sophomore year of high school. I struggled and then always tried to dig myself out of it. So going into college, my main focus was just to challenge myself and try to establish a good base.
Well, you must have done that, Alec, because you're academic, all Big Ten.
Oh, yeah. that's one thing I'm really, I guess, proud of myself about is just taking it real serious. And one thing my dad always told me was just not to let them stick you in classes. You know, at a lot of schools, they just try to get players by, but it's different at Wisconsin. They really try to challenge you, and that's another reason I'm happy I went there. And the whole, just the tutors and everything, they're all there to help you, and you just got to do the work.
Hey, Alec, I'm a basketball coach. I had a kid at Dominican years ago, and He just qualified, just got in, and he did pretty well at Wisconsin. I said, you know, Ray, how is that happening? Like, and he said, Coach, when I got there, they offered me tutors, and I took every single one they offered. And he said, I took every one of them because I knew that I needed a little bit of help. And he said, not that I wasn't smart, but I needed help with time management, and I needed help on how to study for a test. And he said, they're so good. If you're willing to accept the help, they're willing to give the help. And he did a great job of getting through Madison. I think 4.5 years it took him.
Oh, man. Yeah, as a freshman, that's time management is going to be your biggest thing because you're – busiest time in college, now that I'm a senior looking back, is that freshman year because you have – I remember our schedule was we worked out in the morning, and then we would have class, and then we'd have, like, another workout in the afternoon. Then you have tutors, and then you have mandatory study table and this and that and all these meals. So really just getting your time management down was huge. And like he said, just all the support is there. You just have to be willing to accept it.
Hey, what are you going to school? What's your degree in?
Personal finance.
Ah. So
will you manage my checkbook, Alec, please?
You know what? Hey, I got 50 bucks that burning a hole in my wallet. Can you tell me how I can make it 100, I guess, would be the question.
Just invested in the radio show.
Okay. Hey, well played. If you've got some extra money, I got a sponsorship for you as well.
There we go.
Hey, next year.
The pick and save Alec James Student Athlete of the Week or something. Hey, Alec, when you got to Wisconsin, we talked now off the field. The transition on the field, guys, you know, everybody you're playing against is probably the best player on their high school team. Bigger, stronger, faster. What was the learning curve for you on the field?
I redshirted my first year, and that really helped me out a lot. I mean, a lot of guys come in And I was the same way. You want to play right away, but you got to be honest with yourself. And the learning curve, as far as the learning curve, like you said, the guys are bigger, faster, stronger, and you just gotta try and catch up as quick as you can. I mean, you got to take the lift serious. You got to eat right. You just gotta go through the grind, I guess.
Yeah. Do you know? When you started, so you redshirted your first year. Do you know that first year, so your redshirt freshman year, when things started to slow down for you, or did it ever slow down that first year? Like as far as the speed.
So during my first fall camp in college, the whole thing just was going super fast. I mean, I was getting a lot of reps, but it was just I was still lagging behind mentally. And then I was on the scout team for the first year, and that's where you're going to get most of your confidence, and everything's going to start slowing down for you, because now every day in practice you're going against the first team. So especially like at Wisconsin, you're going against some of the best O-linemen every day in practice in the country, and that really helped the game to slow down. I would say not until my first spring is when I really felt like real comfortable out there, to where I knew I could play at this level.
You know, Alec, TC's up at Michigan Tech, and he's playing a new position, corner. And, I during his spring ball, I said to him, boy, you know, you must really be catching on now that you've had the fall and now you've got spring and you're really learning the defense. He said, Dad, we never ran our defense in the fall. We were always the scout team. We were running everybody else's defense. So was that the case for you as well?
Yeah, so we would have cards every week that we would follow. The coaches upstairs, they would kind of scout the other team's offense and draw up their plays, and then you kind of just look at the card and you run whatever defensive scheme they want to see. So you don't really get to work on your own school's defense as much until, I would say, probably bowl prep. You usually have a week where just the scout team goes against the scout team. But you don't really get to work on your own scheme, but you still got to try to focus on your technique and just kind of the little things. That's where all your fundamentals got to come from.
We are talking to Wisconsin Badger defensive lineman Alec James, former Wisconsin High School Football Player of the Year, Brookfield East player. He is a proud Spartan to this day, I'm sure.
Oh,
Yes, he is, right? Yes, he is. Badgers will open up this year at home against Utah State on September 1st. Florida Atlantic comes to Camp Randall the following week, and then to BYU. It's going to be a long flight. Get to play at BYU at 2:30 on the 16th of September. We're going to keep Alec over for one more segment. I'm going to ask him best player he's played against and favorite, other than Camp Randall, favorite stadium to go to. We'll figure that out on the other side of the break. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development. I'm Mike McGivern, alongside my co-host, former head coach at Brookfield East, Tom Swiddle. Our special guest, defensive lineman for your Wisconsin Badgers, he is Alec James. Alec, I'm sure you had special interest watching the draft this year. A couple linebackers, number of Badgers being selected. Is that something that you can let yourself think about a year from now, or are you just worried about what's straight ahead of you?
No, it's something that's always been a dream of mine, and it's cool to see, especially a lot of my good friends who I came in with get drafted and everything. So it's definitely something I can see.
Yeah. Well, and Alec's dad played professional football. He played in the NFL and the USFL, so he's got the pedigree, Mike. He's got the pedigree.
I'm sure he's told you they didn't get paid back then what they're getting paid now, though.
Oh, no.
You know, it's pretty good you're taking all these, you know, getting a degree in finance, because there's going to be a day, I think, Alec, that you're going to have to figure out what to do with that signing bonus and the stuff that you're going to make at the next level. When you got there, and we were talking about during the break, Coach, that they thought maybe he was an outside linebacker, and I know it was something that you...
I can tell you that in Alex recruiting, that everybody had in their mind what role he would fill in their defense. I remember Alec and I went down to Notre Dame a couple times, and they were looking at Alec as that hybrid, you know, where he's going to play up and he's going to play down, you know, different schemes that they had. And you know, and then the Badgers actually recruited Alec as an outside linebacker. Your first year, Alec, you were playing outside linebacker on your feet, which was a new experience for you. So you're learning something completely different than what you had been doing in high school. And then they decided to bulk you up. What did you go to Wisconsin at? Maybe 218 pounds, perhaps?
It was about around 220.
220?
They put some weight on me.
What do you weigh now, Alec? About 275?
Yeah, 270 to 275.
Man, they have you spend, not only they feed you well, but you spend a lot of time in the weight room, I'm sure.
Oh, man, Coach Kalaji, he's one of the best in the country. He really knows what he's doing. It's all the weight the guys are putting on isn't just bad weight. It's just muscle, and you can tell. We had a great off season this year.
Well, I'll tell you, if you looked at Alec, you wouldn't think he weighed 275. He still has a lean kind of look to him, but man, it's there.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey Alec, the coach was telling me that you used to anchor like the 800 or whatever on the state
championships.
The relays.
you're not doing that anymore, right?
No. I'd have to drop a few pounds to do that again.
That was quite an intimidating
man relay.
That was an intimidating sight to see Alec James with that baton heading down the home stretch at relays.
It was fun. It was definitely an experience.
Hey Alec, as I mentioned, I'm a high school basketball coach, and I try to tell these kids that, you know, their 4 years playing high school basketball or high school football are really special. And I want them to understand that sometimes not all these guys are going to be running out on Camp Randall, but some of these guys that are going Division II, Division III, or not playing any sports at the next level, high school football is really a special 4 years experience. And I know you enjoyed the four that you played at Brookfield East.
Oh, yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, especially seeing them win state last year really brought me back to just kind of all the experiences I had in high school. I still miss playing with those guys. I mean, those are guys you've played with since probably middle school.
Right.
And just to go through the whole program together, a lot of guys, they don't really realize until their last year how special it actually is. And, I mean, I miss playing at Brookfield East. I miss Coach Swiddle's getting us fired up at halftime, seeing him yell at everybody. I miss it all, man. It was a real special time, and it's special for anyone that does any sport in high school.
He's told me he never yelled at kids at halftime. I think that's what he...
Oh, no.
he was
only
just,
a couple times.
Only
it was
a couple.
Rare occasions.
hey, the best, other than coming out of the tunnel at Camp Randall, do you have a favorite place that you've gotten a chance to play?
As far as the stadium, other than Camp Randall, Michigan was real cool last year, just to see the big house and see how loud it can get. But other than that, I would say Nebraska. They got a real good fan base, and they can get real loud in there. Those two places are probably my top two outside of Camp Randall.
How about your favorite bowl that you've been to?
Oh, this past one. This past one, they treated us real, real well down in Dallas at the Cotton Bowl. We had all these game rooms and all these different events. I even talked to older guys who have been to Rose Bowls, and they said that this may beat it. It might be better than a Rose Bowl.
You know, wow, that's saying a lot.
You know, years ago,
they treated us real well.
Years ago, as a Badger fan, you would just hope that maybe they'd qualify and get invited to a bowl game. Now it's kind of expected. You know, how good can we get to, what bowl game can we get to, rather than let's hope we get invited to one?
I think Wisconsin, I read this recently, when you're looking at going to bowl games and to the NCAA basketball tournament, I think Wisconsin has the longest streak going for doing both of those in the same year. So, like, I don't know what the streak is, how many years it is, but I believe Wisconsin is the longest one going to the NCAA basketball tournament and going to a bowl game.
Hey, Alec,
I think I saw that as well.
On that note, when the team went a couple of years ago to the finals in NCAA basketball, that had to be a lot of fun for you football guys as well.
Oh, man, yeah. It was real exciting because a lot of those guys that were playing, especially for me and guys in my class, they were guys that we had class with coming into college. So, like, guys like Nigel and Bronson, it was just cool to see them excel at such a high level. And just the program as a whole, it really helped get Wisconsin on the map. And it just kind of proved that we can play around here.
You know, Alec, I watched the Florida game with the Badger football staff at the clinic. I was up in the hospitality room with those guys. A lot of down people after that one.
I was feeling good when Showalter hit that shot, and then not so good about 10 seconds later.
Man, that was an emotional roller coaster. I remember I was watching that too.
Hey, Alec, I got one last question for you. Of all the games on your schedule this year, which is the one you want to win the most?
I mean, a lot of times when people get that question, they always say the first game. But, I mean, for me, it's always Minnesota. I always want to beat Minnesota. I think overall we're finally tied with them in the overall record. And, you know, just to be that class that puts it over the edge, that'd be pretty special. So I'd say Minnesota is always the game that I have circled on my calendar, and I always want to win.
You want that Paul Bunyan axe one more time, right, Alec?
Man, yeah, this is my senior year. I finally get to chop the goalpost.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You know, looking at last year's schedule at this time to this year's schedule, I would prefer this year's schedule. Got some of the big boys at home. You know, you get Michigan at home, you get Iowa at home, you get Purdue and Northwestern at home, Maryland at home. You still got to travel, obviously, to Nebraska, and you'll see how loud that place can get again. Illinois, I think Indiana's on the uptick a little bit, and then you got to go up to Minneapolis and get one. You know, I can't wait for – I always look forward to Wisconsin football. And I right away, when I printed this, I was like, all right, the first game's at 8 o'clock. That's perfect because I'm on the air till noon.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I only get the chance to watch the second half. So, Alec, this has been a true pleasure for us to have you on. Coach Swiddle does nothing but talk really good things about what a young man you were at Brookfield East and the man that you're becoming up at Wisconsin, and I can see why. Good luck in the future. Good luck this season, man. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. And to Coach Swiddle, I appreciate everything you've done for me. I mean, I wouldn't be where I'm at without him, so I really appreciate that as well.
Thank you, Alec.
Man, that's really nice. Alec, thank you again. We're going to get to a break. Other side of the break, Dr. Matt Rogozetsky?
Rogotsky.
Rogotsky. I was close. Dr. Matt Rogotsky. He's Appalachian State right now, but formerly from UW-Platteville. We're going to talk to him. He's written a paper, and he's done a lot of work in the football brain injury and research and things like that, and pretty special stuff he's talking about.
Surprising stuff. Very good stuff.
One of the reasons you wanted to start this show.
Yes.
And he's going to talk to us about that. On the other side of the break, this is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host. He is Tom Swiddle, former head football coach at Brookfield East. You know, Coach, one of the reasons that you came up here and we sat in that office the first time talking about, you know, doing a show like this was specifically for this reason. Yeah, and I remember you walking in saying, hey, look, our numbers are dwindling and people think that football is more dangerous than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that too.
Sure.
And you looked me in the eye and you said, I think it's safer now than it's ever been.
Right.
And here's why.
Football was under attack without question and for good reason. There were things that were going on, but boy, you know, over the last 3, 4, 5 years, things have drastically changed. Football has gone out of its way with rule changes and medical attention and climatization rules and so on. It's really putting the athlete's health out there very, very prominently.
And our next guest that you booked it was July 20th, 2016 that he wrote this research paper, I guess you would call it. And the title of it, Research Revealed Surprising Evidence About Football and Brain Injury, and you had sent this to me, and I appreciate this. You've gotten a chance to read this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We printed that in our quarterly publication, The Point After. It was actually written by Lori Hamer, and it's on Dr. Rogotsky's research.
Right.
But it's great. And he's done other research as well.
And he is now at Appalachian State, but formerly from UW-Platteville. Doctor, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Tom. Mike, thank you. It's great to be on the show.
Yeah. How do you miss Wisconsin a little bit?
Yeah, I do. I do. I tell you, it's a lot hotter here in North Carolina than it was in Wisconsin.
But it's not going to get quite as cold there either.
That's true, yeah. I mean, on the flip side, I'm not expecting much snow this year and not having to shovel, so I like that.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about this. Again, the title, Research Reveals Surprising Evidence About Football and Brain Injury. Were you personally surprised when you saw this?
Yeah, I was. I went into the research with this idea. So there's been some recent evidence that shows in rats and mice, at least, that even these subconcussive hits that players will experience just from playing the game of football, just these subconcussive hits will actually cause brain damage that accumulates over time and can lead to a greater susceptibility of concussions or this disease, that CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which so many people are worried about, which still has not been definitively linked to contact sports. But the idea here was, in some other people's research, that subconcussive impacts will lead to these other problems. So when I found out with my research that there is no evidence of that in humans, at least with the biomarkers, the proteins that I was looking at, I was quite surprised. Pleasantly surprised, I must say.
Yeah, and what it does, Dr. Rogotsky, is it kind of, dispels, if you will, some of the things that is just accepted as fact. That, you play football, even if you don't get concussions, it's that repeated banging of your head, is going to cause long-term brain damage in some way. And what your research has shown is that, minus the concussion hit. So, subconcussive hits is no different than any other sport, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the protein that I was looking at is a protein that is used in the clinic. When somebody comes in with a head injury, they'll measure the protein in the blood, and depending on how high the levels of the concentration protein are, will tell the future of that patient, how long it will take to recovery. So the higher the protein level, the longer the time to recover. And in other studies looking at in soccer players, basketball players, marathon runners, swimmers, this protein has been looked at as well to compare to contact sports. So it's been looked at in karate practitioners as well as boxers. They tend to have higher protein levels than any other sport, which you'd suspect with all the direct hits to the head. But what I found in my research was that, yeah, this protein does not go any higher in the football players after a game compared to any other sport, whether that be running or swimming or playing basketball. So it really looks like maybe there's some transient brain damage that happens when you exercise. And so I don't want to, I'm an exercise physiologist, I don't want anybody to think that they should exercise because it could damage your brain. But what we do know is that exercise actually improves cognitive ability, improves the function of the brain. So a hypothesis that I have, and I don't have any scientific evidence to back me up on this yet, but if you think of muscles, we have to damage muscles in order to make them stronger. It may stand to reason that you have to damage your brain a little bit to make it smarter. Maybe. So maybe there is a connection between activity, transient brain damage, and improved cognitive development.
Now, you found this, your research actually was working with UW-Platteville football team with Coach Emmendorfer, and you had the opportunity to do what? What exactly, when you measured this, the biomarkers, the protein, et cetera, what did you actually do with the football team at Platteville?
All right, so Coach Emmendorfer, I got to give a shout-out to him because he's been very forward-thinking and progressive in this issue of concussion injury. And he had purchased helmets that kind of tell the impacts that players are experiencing during a game, and approached me when I first started at UW-Platteville and asked me if I was interested in doing research in that area, which, you know, when I think of exercise or kinesiology, which is the field I'm in, there's really three branches, and one is biomechanics, one's exercise physiology, one is motor learning, which kind of motor learning works with the patterns of reflexes and how the brain talks to the body, and exercise physiology really talks about metabolism and different biochemical changes that happen during exercise. And then biomechanics really talks about the forces and things that players would experience more connected with the helmet sensors. And so I was interested, but it really wasn't in my field of study. And I started a collaboration. Well, UW-Platteville started a collaboration with the University of West of Scotland. And there is a professor there that has been looking at biomarkers of head injury in karate and boxing practitioners. And I reached out to him and asked what he thought about looking at these proteins in football players to see if there's any brain damage there. And he thought it was a great idea. So then I approached Coach Emmendorfer and I said, you know, this is kind of a different angle on what we talked about before, but would you be willing to allow me to test your players? So this requires a blood draw on my end. And rightly so, he was a little hesitant, as I think most coaches would be. But after speaking with him and the team physician, Dr. Jeff White, and the head certified athletic trainer there, Ryan Breckenridge, we kind of came to this understanding that I would test this out on the junior varsity team first. They had one home game. So what I did is I take blood before the game and measure it for the protein levels, and then after the game and measure it for protein levels. And I really wanted to measure protein levels after a concussion. That's really where my research started, was how can I develop another test, a more objective test, to diagnose concussion injury, where we can just take blood, look at protein levels, and say you had a concussion or you didn't have a concussion. Unfortunately for me, there were no concussions during that game. So then I took blood on all the players.
Mike and I are smiling. Yeah. You know, unfortunately for you, but fortunately for the participants.
The players, yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly. Everybody else is happy except for me. But so then I took the blood from the players afterwards anyway to look at this subconcussive aspect. And what I found was when I looked at other papers written in other sports, the increase in that protein was actually less than a lot of other sports, indicating to me that even though football players are undergoing these subconcussive hits, that is no more dangerous than playing any other sport. So then the following year, I actually got to do this on the varsity team. And I did it on all the home games because when you think of taking the blood, you have to centrifuge it, you have to freeze it at negative 120 degrees Fahrenheit right away. So there's a lot of logistics with it, and only worked out really with home games with the equipment that I had. And they had four home games. So I collected that data before and after each game for four home games. And again, I found the same result. No concussions. But again, those protein levels weren't increasing any more than in any other sport.
Hey, guys, we got to get to a quick break. Doctor, can we hold you over for one more segment?
Yep, no problem.
I want to talk to you about one of the quotes in this paper that you say, although much more research must be conducted to confirm and validate these findings, This specific study suggests playing football in the absence of concussion injury is no more dangerous to the brain than any other sport. I want to talk to you a little bit about that quote on the other side of the break. This is the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show. As always, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development. I am Mike McGivern alongside my co-host. He is the past president of the WFCA, WFCA Hall of Fame member, and former head football coach at Brookfield East, Tom Swiddle. Coach, you got a question for Doc?
Yeah, you know, Mike and I were talking at the break, Dr. Rogotsky, and my question is this. You know, the way the media has latched onto this, and it's almost a crusade, you know, where they'll do whatever they can to discredit football, it seems anyway, that you're, you know, first of all, in your opinion, why is the media doing that kind of thing? Any thoughts on that?
I mean, the media... And I don't want to pick on the media because the media has done me a big favor in getting my research out there, so I appreciate that. But I think really it all started with it was a PBS documentary, and trying to think of what the name was, but it went over the scandal, the so-called scandal of the football players and. CTE and how the NFL has tried to cover up this issue of head injuries, specifically concussions leading to CTE, and that the NFL knew about it the whole time and was not telling the players. And to compare that, I mean, when somebody goes to war, they know that there's a chance they might not come back, they might die. When people box, they knew that there's a chance of what was called dementia pugilistica, which can result in Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. But because people playing with a football, they had a helmet, they thought that their head was protected. And the scandal comes that this is nobody knew except the NFL knew, but they didn't tell anybody. And since then, the media has just kind of latched on to this as a scandal and really trying to inform the public. But then it does kind of seem as if the media is demonizing the game of football as something that should not be played.
Hey, Matt, and I had talked about this this quote in this paper where you say, although more research must be conducted to confirm and validate these findings, this specific study suggests that playing football in the absence of concussion injury is no more dangerous to the brain than any other sport. When you talk about more research, Is that something that is being done? Are you doing it? Is that something that there's other people that are seeing the stuff that you have and saying, hey, look, we really need to dig into this deeper?
Yeah, there are. When I wrote that quote, that was the first paper I published on this, and actually the only paper so far. I still have to publish the data from this past year. But I wrote that quote in light of knowing that I just looked at a JV game and it was one game.
Right.
And in JV games, you know, there's a lot of substitution. And I thought that maybe with a varsity game when there's not so much substitution that the protein levels would go up higher. So I have since confirmed that they don't. So that is more research that I have done. I just haven't published it yet. I will be doing that this fall. There's a group at Texas Christian University, TCU, that has done some research on this, as well as at the University of Buffalo in New York. And there's quite a few research groups in the UK that have looked at this more in ice hockey players and soccer players. And in the absence of concussion, the numbers are pretty much the same as what I'm finding.
And, you know, getting back to the media, Matt, you know, how has the media embraced these new findings, in your opinion? I mean, are they working to get the word out? What's your opinion on that?
I think they have embraced them nicely, at least locally. as far as Madison, their news stations have come out and interviewed me and have presented this, which is what, you know, more than I can expect with just having one study published and there not being a well-known name in the field as of yet. So I think they have been doing it justice, at least locally, not yet on the national level, but they've definitely been embracing it, I'd say.
How about other physicians, other doctors in this field? Have you gotten any pushback on this?
I haven't. I have not received anything negative from anybody. I have received, just talking with physicians one-on-one, a lot of support where they frankly agree with me that there's more hype than reality, I would say. And I got to say, you guys were talking about this right before I came on about the safety of football. And nothing frustrates me more in sports than parents saying that they won't let their kid play football because it's not safe. You're more likely to be injured on your drive to and from the field than you are actually on the field. And what sport would you rather play? I mean, which sport is safer and under more scrutiny right now than football?
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, you don't have to worry about safety with football. Everybody is under the microscope with that. So
where do you go from here? I mean, what are you working on currently? What do you plan on doing perhaps in the near future to further your research?
Well, my goal now at App State here, and I still have to talk to the coach at App State to get the okay there, but my goal is to continue doing what I was doing at Platteville, but looking at more biomarkers. There's a slew of biomarkers that can indicate head injury, and I'm looking for the most sensitive one to do that in concussed individuals. Like I said, the protein I'm looking at now is used in the clinic, but those are usually major traumatic injuries, and that protein may not be sensitive enough to look at mild traumatic brain injuries. So I'm going to continue to look at different proteins. My main goal with this is to find a protein or maybe two proteins that I can look at in a player and that I can assess it throughout the season, and that as that protein increases throughout a season, I could actually, one, take them out of, or recommend that they be taken out of a game because that marker is actually indicating susceptibility to a concussion injury, so we can actually avoid concussion injuries altogether. And secondly, that we can use a protein when somebody gets a hit where certified athletic trainer thinks or coach thinks that there could be a concussion there, that we can take a blood sample and say, yes, there was a concussion, no, there wasn't a concussion. The test right now, I think we are to the sport concussion assessment tool, the fifth edition, that which was just implemented over the spring here, and I think a lot of certified athletic trainers will be using this in the fall. There's a lot of subjectivity to it. You know, you ask a player, do they have a headache? Do they feel like they're in a fog? And then you do tests, balance tests, memory tests. And depending on where the injury in the brain is, a person may show normal or not normal. My goal is that we don't have to guess. We can just look at a protein. All practitioners can agree that this person had a concussion, didn't have a concussion. Because I don't want to take people out of the game because they may have had a concussion when they didn't. And I don't want people going back in the game because
if they have,
they
one.
Got yep. cleared, but they actually had a concussion. A lot of people worry about CTE, and to me, CTE is not a worry. What we should be worrying about is second impact syndrome, and that second impact syndrome is when somebody has a concussion and they go back in the game, and then they have another big blow to the head, which results in hemorrhaging in the brain, coma, death. Those are the things to worry about, not CTE.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. Doctor, thank you so much. We really appreciate your time, and it really is fascinating. Good luck. I hope you enjoy Appalachian State. I know it's hot now, but come February, you're going to be feeling pretty good about that decision.
And we'll check in with you in the future as well.
So. Thank you. I appreciate you having me on the show.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we're going to get to a break. Other side of the break, Rich Brzezinski from Positive Coaching Alliance is going to join us. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
No games on the schedule?
No!
That doesn't stop us from talking football. This is the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development. Here are your hosts, past WFCA President Tom Swiddle and WSSP High School Insider Big Time Mike McGiver.
Oh, welcome back to the Pick and Save Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show. As always, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development. I'm Mike McGivern alongside former head football coach at Brookfield East, Tom Swiddle. So, Coach, your alma mater is down 3-1 in the fifth in the state finals for baseball.
Yeah.
And our next guest is the lacrosse coach over there.
Mark yes, he Gadot. Is. And he knows you from your brother's show. You guys.
Hey, you know what? He's a good guy. He runs a really good program at Marquette.
He sure does.
Yeah. We are now joined Rich Brzezinski. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I learned more about lacrosse talking to Rich in 10 minutes than I knew my whole life before that. He just did a great job of explaining not only the game of lacrosse, but how he believes a program should be run and how he runs his program over at Milwaukee Marquette. And then we did a segment on that for Around the Corner with John McGivern. And I got a chance to go to one of their games and watch a game. Yeah, it was really interesting, and was really impressed with Rich. And said, "Hey, I need to get you on my Varsity Blitz show. I need to get you talking high school sports with me sometime." And you set that up, Tom. So thank you for this.
Well, thank you to Bob Albrightson who gave me Rich's name and number to contact him.
Hey, Rich, I went on the website today, and you can see this website. It's positivecoach.org, and I really like the mission statement. Of the Positive Coaching Alliance. The Positive Coaching Alliance mission is to transform the youth sports culture into a development zone where all youth and high school athletes have a positive character-building experience that results in a good experience. And I'm thinking, Rich, that mission statement, I think, has been lost throughout the years in a lot of different sports, not only in this area, but I think throughout the country. Rich, are you there?
Yeah. No, it has. And, it can be a struggle at times. And I think one of the challenges or two of the challenges that we see that are intertwined are often coaches kind of falling in line or embracing too much of a win-at-all-cost mentality. And I think when that happens, things can go down. The ship can start to take on a little bit of water and things can get a little bit more difficult. And the other challenge is that we see what we see in sports that's live and on the air and on TV all the time is the entertainment sports culture, which is a business. And it's very different than what the youth and high school sports experience is really all about.
And, you know, Rich, I spent quite a bit of time going through the website that Mike just mentioned, and Let's not forget one of the tenets of your program is, you know, we still are out to win. This isn't about, you know, like, just giving a trophy out for just participating. You know, the goal is still to win, but you can do so in a very positive way in which players and everybody's having a great experience.
You can, and I think that's the big takeaway, and that's the message that we're trying to share as an organization and as a nonprofit that has chapters and offices throughout the United States, is that we're trying to really impact the culture of youth sports en masse. And one of the things that we often hear, particularly because of the region in which we were founded, which was Northern California, a lot of people say, oh, you know, what is this? You know, some hippy-dippy tree hugger. Everybody's a winner. And that couldn't be further from the truth. We embrace competition, and we just want to see coaches, parents, and athletes understand how special and how precious that competition is and really respect our opponents. I think that's a really, really important component and key concept here. And if coaches can do that, if athletes can do that, if parents can do that, and that's just one aspect is respecting the opponents, we really enjoy and can cherish that opportunity to be faced by a worthy opponent and someone that's going to challenge us to be better and to be better than we were yesterday.
Rich Brzezinski is with Positive Coaching Alliance. Again, positivecoach.org for more information. And I was on that website quite a bit this morning as well. And there's a line in something that I was reading that jumped off the page at me. It says, coaches have to realize that they're teaching their players. What they teach their players carries far beyond the field into the classroom, at home, or even into future jobs. And I think that's, you know, as coaches – Look, I've been doing this a long time. Coach, you did a long time. I know, Rich, you've done it a while. And there are times where, you know, we get carried away with wins and losses. There are times that we, you know, look at a game coming up on our schedule as a must win. And I know that every coach gets carried away with that in his own certain or her certain way. But if you can take that back and take a step back and, again, looking to compete all the time, but there's lessons that can be learned on how to win, and there's lessons to be learned on how to lose. And I had a basketball coach in here a few years ago, and he said, look, I always start our schedule, our non-conference schedule, this is a basketball guy, with some really difficult opponents, and in hopes that even if we get drilled and lose, that there are lessons that I can teach, because we're going to find out where we are right off the jump. He said, I don't really get upset if we lose and we play hard, play as a team, and trust each other. He said, because then I'm okay with that. But it's all of a sudden when our kids start getting a little bit, you know, they stop trusting each other. If we get beat by 20 and don't learn anything, that's a really bad loss. And Rich, I would assume that he is somebody that is talking to the same stuff that you guys talk about.
Absolutely. I love that story. One of the key mental models and key principles that we have here at Positive Coaching Alliance is what we call our double goal coach mental model. And that double goal means we are encouraging coaches to coach to win and to teach life lessons. And it's easy to fall into that trap of, you know, that must win game, or, you know, we have to have this stellar performance, or this athlete on our roster has got to exceed X, you know, statistic to allow us to be successful today. And what we're defining, or what that coach is defining as success, is a win versus a loss. And the challenge here is that coach might be embracing too much focus on the outcome and less focus on the process. And what's so important is coaching to the process, not the outcome. The outcome, we don't always have control over. But as coaches, as athletes, we can control multiple steps in the process that will then allow us to be successful. And if, as coaches, we're rewarding effort based on how well our athletes are learning, how well they're bouncing back from mistakes, and how well they are applying effort towards the overall process, the steps A through F or whatever they might be, the outcome will take care of itself. And again, the win or the loss, that doesn't define success. Did the kids have a good experience? Did they learn? Did they have fun? Was their character tested today? And did they bounce back from adversity? Did some guys make some mistakes that don't usually make mistakes? How did they carry themselves? Did they bounce back from that? Were they able to, you know, embrace the use of some positive body posture and use some techniques like positive self-talk to kind of get them out of that slump? And as a coach, that's our job. That's our job, is to give our athletes those tools to be successful and to bounce back from those challenges.
And what I really like about your mission, about your organization, Rich, is the fact that it's not just about coaches, but it's about the athletes as well and the parents. There's all kinds of information out there for coaches, parents, and athletes. And if you can get everybody working together on the same page, I think that's a lot easier for a coach then to, in fact, instill some of the things that you're talking about.
No doubt. You know, our tagline is developing better athletes, better people. And to do that, it's not just the coach's job, right? Parents have got to be involved. the athletes themselves have to be involved. The athletic league or the school administration needs to be involved in that process. Everybody needs to be on the same page. And we talk a lot about the concept of aligning vision. You know, we can't go to a place where we're being successful and we're providing a positive experience for these kids. We can't all go to that place if we don't all believe in a common vision. And so at Positive Coaching Alliance, one of the things that we do in terms of providing content and workshops and resources to our partner organizations that we align with is that we want to impact the coaches, the athletes, the parents, the organizational and school leaders. And also we also do quite a bit of work with officials. And again, it's all about getting everybody on the same page, everybody buying into this common philosophy and using common language. And that goes a long way.
Hey, Rich, can we hold you over for one more segment?
Absolutely.
That's awesome. I want to find out if for the coaches that are listening, they want to get involved in what Rich is doing. We'll get you a way to get involved. Again, he is Rich Brzezinski. He's the head lacrosse coach at Milwaukee Marquette. He's involved with Positive Coaching Alliance. Their website, positivecoach.org, you can go take a look at. And here locally, if you want to get involved or talk to Rich, we'll ask him how some of the coaches that listen to the show, how do you guys get involved with him? We'll do that on the other side of the break. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mike McGivern alongside Coach Tom Swiddle. He is WFCA Hall of Fame member, past president of the WFCA, former head football coach Brookfield East. We were joined by Rich Brzezinski, Positive Coaching Alliance. Hey, Rich, if there are coaches that are listening to this show that want to know more about what you do and what Positive Coaching Alliance does, should they go on the website at positivecoach.org and get involved that way?
Absolutely. There's two specific ways that I would encourage coaches to learn more about Positive Coaching Alliance. First would be going to our main site, positivecoach.org. You can click on our Facebook, our Twitter buttons there to sign up and learn more. We also can, coaches can sign up for our newsletters. And then our contact page, which is found, a link for that is found at the bottom of the homepage. Tons of information about how to get aligned with a PCA representative that can talk with coaches that are interested in bringing Positive Coaching Alliance programming to their league or their school. And then the other really neat website that we have is our Development Zone Resource Center. It's an online archive of thousands of tips, tools, resources, videos, book excerpts, downloadable one-pagers that coaches have access to. It's DevZone, DevZone, at positivecoach.org. Thousands of amazing resources that are for coaches, parents, athletes, school, and youth sports organizational leaders. Great resource.
Hey, Rich, a long time ago when I started coaching basketball, might have been in my second or third year. I've been doing it for 35 years, so it's a long time ago. I had a parent, and she had one of the big cameras because we had VHS back then, tape one of my games and came up and gave me the tape and said, "Hey, I taped this for you." And I said, "Oh, that's great. Thanks." She goes, I hope you're not mad at me. I don't think that, you know, I didn't tape it for the reason you think I taped it. Go home and watch it, and please don't be mad at me." I said, "Oh, okay." Rich, she taped me on what a complete idiot I was on the sidelines. And do you know how eye-opening and how embarrassing and humbling that was? I mean, I was just a young kid, but it was, I was so embarrassed. And when I saw her, I went up and hugged her, and I said, "Thank you." And she goes, "Really?" And I said, "Wow. Thank you. I cannot believe how ridiculous I looked and sounded." And she said, "Well, I'm glad you took it that way because you're a really nice young man, but boy, you get after it on the sidelines." And, you know, I'll never forget watching that tape. And I don't know if I made all the changes, and I'm still coaching. I don't know if I've made all these kind of changes that I would, you know, be the poster child for positivecoach.org. But I think I made enough changes throughout the years after, you know, that videotape and trying to figure out, you know, the correct way to do some of this stuff. And I just think that some of the – I wish I would have learned this stuff back when I first started coaching.
I bet. And talk about an awesome opportunity for some personal reflection.
Sure.
And really an opportunity to develop some self-awareness as a coach. And thinking back on just the story that you shared, it was probably one of the most important impacts as a young coach that you could have had. And I mean that in a positive way as well, because a lot of coaches do not realize how they are acting on the sidelines. And it has such a dramatic impact on the tone and the tenor of how our athletes then behave in games and how they do or do not honor the game by respecting the officials and the opponents and the rules. They look at us. I mean, there's 20, 30 sets of eyes at all times looking at us as coaches. And as a coach, we're leaders. We have to lead. And one of the things we have to lead by is by example. And if we're running our mouths and throwing clipboards and screaming and yelling at every call an official makes, what do you think the kids are going to do? You totally gave them a validation to go and do the same thing.
Hey, Rich, and also what happens, because I've seen this, if the head coach complains about every call and he allows his assistant coaches to do the same, the kids then start, and then it moves into the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to sit and watch if everybody is allowed to yell and scream at the officials from the coaching staff to the players, how quickly it moves right into the audience, into the crowd, to the parents and to the brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, and the whole group of them, that everybody is yelling.
It's a slippery slope. It is. And one thing that I mention every year at one of two mandatory preseason parent meetings that we have at Marquette is reminding parents that, hey, the officials are not infallible, right? They're going to make mistakes, but they're not out here to change the outcome of the game. They're doing the best job that they can. And as coaches, we have to recognize that they're not going to see everything. They're not going to get every call right, but they're going to do the best that they can. And we need to respect that. As a coach, I may not agree with every call that an official makes, but I'm not going to get in his or her ear all game long to hope to get a call later in the fourth quarter. To me, that's not really honoring the spirit of the game. And, you know, I have to remind parents too that, you know, look, there might be a bad call, but you're not going to see me ranting and raving on the sidelines. What impact is that going to provide to us as a team? That's really just probably going to annoy the official and not help us down the road. I'm going to massage that relationship. And if it's something that's egregious or something that, you know, has an impact on player safety, for example, sure, I'll address it, but I'll address it at the appropriate time, at a timeout or a quarter break, and I'll have a dialogue with an official as opposed to yelling at him.
You know, Rich, what I like about this is you're just not a talking head, but you are somebody who practices what you preach. You are a coach, and you've already somewhat, you know, if not all, answered my next question. I was going to ask you, what are your parent meetings like? I mean, if you know, you must have some real dynamic things that go on at your parent meetings, and you've given us some insight in terms of what you talk to parents about in regarding officials. But what, as a coach, what advice would you give to a coach, the things that should be handled at a parent meeting?
It's a great question. And the first thing is have one. A lot of coaches
right.
don't do it.
I know.
A lot of coaches just don't do it because it's cumbersome. It's an extra thing. I mean, coaches are busy. And coaching is, everyone that's listening that's a coach knows it. It's a tough gig. And you don't always have time to do all the things you want to do. But this is something that if coaches aren't doing it, we need to do it because we got to get parents on the same page and help them understand. So I do share a variety of things. One, I start off by always sharing my coaching philosophy. I let parents know right off the bat, and I put it up on a PowerPoint slide. and at my written coaching philosophy, and I talk about it, and I let parents read it so they can understand where I'm coming from as a coach. But we also talk about one of the Positive Coaching Alliance mental models, which is being a second goal parent. So we talk about the double goal coach, which is coaching to win and teach life lessons. We want parents to focus on being a second goal parent, focusing on that second goal of the teaching and learning of life lessons. Leave the first goal of winning, leave that to the coaches and the kids. That's their world. As a parent, enjoy the experience, come to the games, cheer on your child, and take verbs out of cheering. So, for example, in lacrosse, the ball's on the ground a lot. So, you know, parents screaming, pick up the ball, pick up the ball, pick up the ball. I mean, the kid's trying to pick up the ball, believe me. He's not trying to miss the ball.
Right.
Telling him to pick up the ball, he knows what he needs to do. Just encourage him to do his best. And don't be afraid to cheer on the other team. I do that all the time. I'm always cheering on the opponent. When they make a great play, I let those kids and that coach know, man, that was an awesome play. Well done. And that's a good thing to do. And that can be a tough thing.
Yes, that is.
For fans and for coaches and, you know, our athletes to do. But when you see something great, man, you gotta applaud that.
Yeah.
So those are a couple things that we do to really get parents on the same page. And one thing that's really important is playing time, right? That's an issue that we deal with at every level of sport. And I discourage parents from contacting coaches about their child's playing time. What we do instead is encourage the parent to empower their child to advocate on behalf of him or herself to talk to the coach about what they can do better or different or more of to get the playing time they think they should get.
Yeah, that's really important. You know, I moved a long way from when that woman gave me the videotape, but me cheering for the other team, I haven't gotten that far yet. I'm just being honest. I have not gotten that far. Rich Brzezinski, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. PositiveCoach.org is where you can find a lot of information. Look at the PCA way. You can print this document, and I've done that. And take a look at that. There's some really good. There's 8 points in there, and they're really good. Keep up the good work, Coach. Thanks for
Rich.
Your time.
Hey, thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you again.
You bet. On the other side of the break, Brian Henson's in studio, commissioner for the Greater Metro Conference, and we're going to reach out to Neil Brunner. He sounds just like his brother.
He does a little bit.
He does. And we're going to congratulate him, and we're going to talk a little bit about officiating.
Yes, we are.
See if we can't get some guys interested in becoming officials, and Neil going to the WFCA Hall of Fame. It's pretty awesome. And we'll do that on the other side of the break. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show, presented by Tony Rush and Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host, former head football coach at Brookfield East, Tom Swiddle. We're also joined now in studio, the commissioner of the Greater Metro Conference, Brian Henson. Brian, it's good to see you again.
Always great to be here with you guys.
How you been?
Terrific. It's been a great summer.
Man, well, it's getting close. Yeah, everything's going to start rolling here in a minute, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Everybody's getting ready for August to start in 2 days, and
he's
football
not,
will be rolling.
Swiddle's not. Look at how relaxed he
is. What are you talking? I went to 7 different schools this past week.
Oh, my goodness.
And watched them practice and, you know, helped out on some occasions.
Yeah. But you don't. Maybe
but then I could go home.
Then you can go home.
Then
that's
I went
right.
home.
And Ingrid isn't putting everything together. And, you know,
yeah.
She's more relaxed.
Oh, definitely. Most definitely.
Hey, we are also joined on the phone, Neil Brunner, longtime football official, recently selected and going to be inducted into the WFC Hall of Fame. Hey, Neil, congratulations. That's a great accomplishment.
Well, thank you very much. Pretty humbling, actually, because there's so many good officials out there, and it's not very many officials that get that honor in, you know, in the WFCA. So it's humbling, and I'm really appreciate that.
Well, I'll be up there. I'm going to be up there next year because I experienced that this year, and I got to be honest, I want to be up there for you guys. and to clap and to stand up and just listen to some really good. Certainly, I don't know if Dave Keel's going to do it again, but
Dave, I'm sure will.
He's so good. He's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's a good honor, Neil. So, again, congratulations on that.
Not a lot of officials have gotten that honor, Neil, but not a lot of officials have your background either. That is for sure.
Neil, how long have you been an official in football?
It's 43 years.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's a, you know, I've gotten jobs, lost jobs, and that's one constant throughout everything, you know, that's been the officiating.
Well, and Neil's flying in from Washington, D.C., where he did an arena game last night. So he's working even as we speak almost.
How do you like doing those arena games?
It's a lot of fun. It's, you know, there's and the officials that are in there, I mean, these are guys that have worked championship games and people that have gone through it. As far as officials, there's a lot of guys in the NFL now. A lot of guys that have worked Division I football and, you know, in and out. So, but the games themselves, you know, it's in a quarter the size of a regular football field, and they're still, but they still come down to blocking, tackling, and scoring touchdowns.
Yeah, I worked for the Milwaukee Mustangs the first 2 years there here in Milwaukee.
Yes.
And that game,
I do remember that.
Yeah, it was an interesting game. The owners for that team were interesting as well. Well, that's a whole different show. We'll have to get into that. A whole different show. Hey, Brian, as the commissioner of the Greater Metro Conference, as football starts to get going now, what does that do for you as far as your job? Everything's set now? You're ready to go?
No. A matter of fact, this is an interesting year because the WIA has done realignment this year.
Right.
So in the Greater Metro Conference, West Dallas Central heads to the Woodland Conference, and we have Germantown and Wauwatosa West coming in. So this has been a very busy summer getting ready for that. As a matter of fact, one of my projects that I'm working on right now is like the revamp of our conference website and just rebranding everything in the Greater Metro Conference.
Yeah, how will that affect the scheduling as far as non-conference games and stuff like that?
Well, you know, it's interesting for us because part of the realignment package that was put together by the WIA is we have a mandatory crossover game with the Classic Eight. So effectively, you don't schedule a non-conference game in our conference like you did in the past. The way we situated it is that depending on where we finished 2 years ago, you'd have a crossover matchup. So, for example, Marquette's playing Arrowhead. But the way they've structured that is it's that the two first-place teams from the Classic Eight and the Greater Metro will play in week one. The theory is that it'll give them an opportunity to recover from beating up on each other. So it's a matchup of first place, crossover, second place, third place, all the way down. And so we have a rolling non-conference game with the Classic Eight, but it's mandatory. So the coaches in our conference don't have to go out and find non-conference opponents anymore.
Who set up that idea? Because if there's a conference throughout the state that I wouldn't maybe want to do that with, it would be that conference, just because I think that that's probably the best high school football conference in the state of Wisconsin.
Hard to argue that.
Yeah. But, you know, you guys go, if you're going to be the best, you got to play the best, I guess, right?
Well, and that was really out of our hands. Actually, Deb Hauser, who just announced her retirement from the WIA after a very distinguished career up at Stevens Point, she set up everything with the realignment, and the WIA told us we're going to have a mandatory crossover game. We have the ability to adjust how we do the crossover game, but the decision was made to do it from effectively a first place, second place, third place crossover. And I think we'll see how it goes the first 2 years. We've got it all set for 17 and 18 and kind of reevaluate how the crossovers work from there.
Do you think the realignment, look, if you can, in your crystal ball 5 years down the road, how different is this going to look?
Oh, it's going to look different. I mean, you can see right now, and I'll just be perfectly honest with you, we got realignment hadn't even occurred yet, and there are already schools that were asking to be realigned again. So I think it's going to be an ongoing thing. I mean, football definitely is something that is a key factor in realignment.
It's the driving force.
And there's no doubt about it. And people like to go, they say they want relief for a place that they can be competitive, which I always translate as they'd like to get situated in a conference where they think they can win. I mean,
well, I totally. East might be the best example out of any of this that I think they did ask for relief, and I think they should have gotten relief and they didn't, and I wish that maybe they would have.
But you know, you're talking about one sport at Wauwatosa East in football, and you know, having worked there, just retired from Wauwatosa East, and knowing that staff the way I do, there's a lot of coaches there that in their sport, respective sport, did not want to leave the Greater Metro Conference.
Interesting.
So, yeah. You know, what I think is going to happen at some point in the future is you're going to see some kind of football-only conference.
Yeah, I agree.
That's the way to go.
Yeah, and almost districts in the football side.
In that sense. Yeah. And that was discussed, and even as an association, we've done some things, you know, to get information from our membership in terms of what they want to do.
And to build on Tom's point, I think that's it. I think everyone looks at Tosa East saying that they need relief, but you look at, like, John Simon. He's been an outstanding boys volleyball coach, and they're always in the top five teams every year in boys volleyball in the state. The basketball team, to be honest with you, if I went back and looked at the records, Tosa East basketball may be the winningest boys basketball program in the conference. So while Tosa East has been very competitive, and they've been an outstanding citizen of the conference as well, so I'm still happy they're in the conference. Obviously, that's the way realignment worked out, but I'm thrilled that they're in. And actually, I'm really excited about Tosa West coming in, too. Jeff Gabrielson's been awesome to work with there.
Hey, Neil, real quick, we're going to get to a break in a second. But, you know, when we talk about you being an official for as long as you have, do you get worried that there's not enough young officials coming to take the place of some of the guys that are getting a little long in the tooth?
And, that's a good point. You know, when I first started 43 years ago, it took me 4 years to get into a varsity, to just work a varsity game. Now you can be a first-year official and probably work, be offered a varsity game because they're so short of officials on that. I mean, there's so many, different benefits to being part of, in officiating on that. Some of that, I mean, once guys, so many guys are playing, and I've worked with guys that have worked, football at the highest levels, in the NFL and many in college and, a lot in high school as well. It's great once they're done playing, though. It's a great way to stay involved with the game. It really becomes a passion because, you're working through this whole thing and, the people you meet along the way, players, coaches, as well as, as well as the officials and, some of the memories of all the shared experiences, a great way to give back to the community. Unless you get to, the Division I college or in the professional level, you're not making a whole lot of money on this, but there's a lot of commitment. And those are just some of the benefits. It's just very rewarding to get into officiating and stay with it. And
plus you get to hang out with guys like Coach Swiddle and me on Thursday nights, right?
Absolutely.
I'm sure that's a big deal for you boys. He's Neil Brunner. Again, we've had him. We're going to keep him for the next segment as well. WFCA Hall of Fame member. He'll be inducted next year. Also joined in studio, Brian Henson, commissioner of the Greater Metro Conference. We'll continue our conversation with these guys on the other side. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Pick and Save WFCA show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising Leadership Development. I'm Mike McGivern alongside my co-host Tom Swiddle. We're joined in studio by Brian Henson. He's the commissioner of the Greater Metro Conference, and Neil Brunner is on the phone. He is a football official recently selected to be inducted into the WFCA Hall of Fame. Hey, Tom, when you were coaching football, we're always talking in basketball as well about making sure that we have young officials to take over. Was that a concern for you?
It is now.
It is now.
Now that I've, talked to individuals like Wade Lebecki at the WIAA, Neil, Brian, I've become aware of the shrinking pool of football officials out there. And you and Neil kind of touched on that right before the break. But I think, we have two very knowledgeable men who know about the impending perhaps shortage of football officials. And, we, the WFCA, would really like to help out in recruiting individuals into the profession. Brian, can you give us an idea of your role as commissioner of the Greater Metro Conference, the difficulty of getting officials and assigning them to games? I mean, you work several years out.
Yeah, it really is a challenge. And, you know, I'm really excited to be in after Rich because that was a really positive message that he delivered, including with coaches being positive and even his, if you want to say, his kind of his philosophy on dealing with officials and stuff. And I know there's a lot of coaches that listen to the show, and I would emphasize this. Think about this. The players that are playing for you now are really the potential football officiating pool in the future. You know, you're not going to have a kid that was a swimmer or a golfer that's generally going to say, I want to be a football official. It may be a young kid that doesn't have the opportunity to coach because their college schedule doesn't allow, or maybe their job after college doesn't allow. But it really gives them an opportunity to stay a part of the game. But I think if coaches only treat officials as kind of a necessary evil, kind of another piece of the puzzle, you know, that kind of cats and dogs relationship that's always going to be there without emphasizing the other side of it, they're missing out on an opportunity to have some really quality kids get involved and be the football officials of the future. It's a great way to stay involved with the game without needing to put the time and commitment in that a coach has to, even though there is a lot involved.
And Neil, I've heard you say that's partly why you became involved in football officiating. You wanted to stay involved in the game.
And that's, yeah, exactly. I went through high school, I didn't really have a big, high school career like my brother did. But there was an official in the neighborhood, and I remember him doing, some of the games. And then when I got out of the Air Force, my wife looked at me and she knew I wasn't all that athletic on a football field. And she suggested, when I was in the Air Force, why don't you look into doing that when we get back? Well, I remembered that, maybe to her chagrin sometimes. It is a time commitment, but, it's been a, good overall, through everything. So then he got me involved with the WIA, with the local association, and those local, I'm part of the Milwaukee Officials Association. And that's been a big part of, helping me get through my success and collaborating and getting, finding lower level games and getting hooked up and things. So that's a big part, being part of the local association. And, he got me started with, the WIA and getting registered there and then progressed through different levels.
Hey, Neil, when you have a younger guy just starting out and maybe he's working his first or second or third year on the varsity level, and normally your guys stick together, so you're with the same crew. But if you get a chance to talk to that guy about some of the things that you would be able to teach him as far as, being a good communicator and making sure that, they're doing things the right way, what are a couple of things that you would tell a young official?
And that's a big thing. I mean, there'd be times we'll bring an official along, a younger guy, along to a varsity game and try and work with him in a youth or JV level on that and talking about, the first thing is, knowing the rules, but then as you get experience, you learn how to apply those rules and, the spirit of things on that. And talking about, comportment is a big thing, looking sharp and being in condition, your uniform looking good, you're groomed well, that you're just using a lot of life lessons. I think you touched on it, Mike, the communication is huge. And from my early years on, learning how to communicate and those people skills and preparing, be prepared. And a big thing is, a mentor. Don't be afraid to get involved with, kind of hook up with somebody with more experience and, look for those answers on that. But so much of it carries over to other things within life that I think it builds a strong foundation and helps you think quick on your feet and gives you a presence of mind as well, problem resolution. So a lot of things carry over into life, same thing. But if there's one word I could say, be a great communicator.
Neil, we only have about a minute left or so. What steps would somebody who wants to get involved in football officiating, what steps should they be taking?
Well, the first one I would say is go to the WIA website, WIA.org, and it gives you everything that you need on the, you know, registering with the WIA. You do that online. The second, I would say that WIA has this information as well on their website, is joining a local association wherever you are in the state. And there's a number of them throughout the state. Maybe there's three or four or five within the southeastern Wisconsin area. And then as far as, you know, you're buying your own uniform and equipment, there's some information as far as mail order with, you know, Honus and Jerry Davis and Smitty on the WIA website too. So I think going, the big thing is going to the WIA website, clicking on the officials tab, and then it has, you know, and following the links to the new official, or, you know, joining up at, and registering as an official.
Neil, thank you very much again. Congratulations, Brian. I want
thank
to get you,
Neil.
You back
thank
in.
Thank you, Brian.
Always awesome to be
Blitz.
Here.
Hey, Tom,
thank
it's been,
so
good, been a good season for
been
us.
A great season. Can we do it again next year, Mike?
We can. You bet. We'll be right back a year from now, and I look forward to that. Good luck with the off season now for
thank
you.
Thank you, and good luck with all the things you got going.
Yeah, you bet.
Coming up.
I'll see you on Thursday night.
You will.
Excellent. Thanks for listening. This is the Pick and Save, Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show presented by Raising the Stakes Fundraising and Leadership Development on Sports Radio 105.7 FM. The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.